Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Steve Penny, publisher and editor of thesilverchartist.com. And Steve, it's always great having you on the show just to get your technical thoughts on the markets and also your macro fundamental approach to trading in these wild, up and down, volatile, and somewhat depressed markets that we find ourselves in today. I guess just before we get into the chart, Steve, what's your general take on the weakness we're seeing in the general markets, almost in every sector across the board? And do you think, in a general sense, it's overdone now and we can expect a relief rally?
Yes, I think almost all asset classes are deeply oversold and are due for a relief rally, if not a trend reversal, with the exception of bond yields are extremely overbought and the dollar is overbought. Everything else is pretty much oversold, to include precious metals, uranium, hard assets, and even general equities.
Yeah, well, one of the few green things we've seen on the screen has been the U.S. dollar and has been the yields that we're seeing on the 10 and 30 year. Maybe let's start there then. You provided us a chart with the 10-year Treasury yield. It's a 40-year monthly chart, and you see this 40-year downtrend line where things have dipped way below it, and it goes all the way back to 2020. I believe it was in August when we saw the 10-year trade all the way down to 40 bips. And then it has had an epic rally. If you think about it on a proportional basis, it's been an insane rally to the upside, over 3% on the 10-year at one point. What's your take on it now, looking at this chart of the 10-year Treasury yield?
Yeah, I believe from a big picture perspective, that March 2020 low in yields, I think the absolute low was like 0.36%, which is absolutely ridiculous. I believe that marked the end of a 40-year bull market in bonds, and we're seeing this major relief rally going from 0.36% all the way up to just over 3% in just under 2 years. That said, you know, I do think the trend is higher in yields. However, we're extremely overbought here. As you can see on this chart, for anyone who's looking at this online, we're up against a major 40-year resistance line, and we're tapping that right now. And RSI is the most overbought on the monthly chart that it's been since 1981, so over 40 years. And you know, whenever you're overbought against clear resistance, there's a very, you know, there's a statistical likelihood that you're going to at least pull back quite sharply. So I'm looking for yields to fall.
Well, I guess the converse of the yields being overbought is that bonds are oversold and they've really crashed. It's not really a surprise, Steve, when you think about the Federal Reserve removing their accommodative buying of 120 billion bonds per month and doing their tapering, and they tapered by March. My question to so many guests on our show was, who in the world is going to buy these bonds? And obviously, for the last few months, nobody, because they've been crashing. But they are really oversold at this point. So when you look at this chart of TLT that you provided, which is a good proxy on the 20-plus, really the 30-year bonds, what's your take on the bond market?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Who's going to buy these bonds? Because we're going to continue to run these massive deficits, and those deficits have to be financed. So who's going to buy these bonds if the Fed is stepping back, if China is stepping back, if Russia is stepping back, if Saudi Arabia is stepping back? Who's going to lend money to the United States? And I think the big answer is going to be eventually the Federal Reserve is going to reverse course and be the buyer of last resort. But the question is, when do they step in and when do they pivot? But, you know, I think a lot of this has already been priced in. That's why we've seen yields run so far so fast. I like to say price and volume precede the news. So I think, you know, most of this is already priced in and we're due for, you know, pullback in yields. I'm actually long bonds in my trading account, which is something I never thought I would say, you know, as a precious metals investor. But I am trading this to the long side, you know, as a short term trade. I'm long bonds.
Now, I see that there's a support line you drew on this chart in green. It looks like it's gone down and tapped that, the TLT, and you're using that as your way to play the bond market. When it jumps up, would you be selling it at that red downtrend line that would be resistance?
Yeah, for a short-term trade, yes, I scale out. So I like to take a little bit off the table once I'm up 5 to 10% in a trade, just to get that psychological kind of risk management, just take a little bit off the table. But yeah, I would look to be all out of that trade once that resistance line is tested.
Well, it's interesting, Steve, because we normally think in financial chaos and in geopolitical chaos that gold would get the bid, that bonds would get a bid, and the dollar. We've definitely seen the U.S. dollar get the bid, and that's why it has run so much, but not so much in gold and not so much in bonds. But in the bond situation, I mean, people just have to look at the math on it. Even if you were getting a 3% coupon on a 10-year yield, that's still negative real rates because inflation's at 8.5%. So even if there's a bounce in the bond market, do you think longer term, as long as we stay in negative real rates, that they're going to remain under pressure, let's say, for the medium to longer term?
Yes. Yeah. I think, the bond bubble, I think, has burst. And I think over the longer term, yeah, we're going to see much higher rates. We have to. But over the short term, we're just, overbought on that yield.
Okay. Well, we talked about people have at least piled into the dollar as their version of a safe haven. You've provided us two different dollar charts. Let's start with the 12-year monthly chart. The dollar came down to major support. It didn't quite get to the 88 level, but it got to that 89 level last year. And it's rallied up really strongly up to over 103, almost to 104 at one point. Looks like it's running into that resistance. What's your take on the U.S. dollar here? Is it just going to have a mild pullback and then test this resistance area, maybe get swatted down and go higher? Or is this possibly marking a top in the dollar?
I think the probabilities are that we're near a major top in the dollar. It's right now the most overbought it's been since 2015. And then if you exclude 2015, you have to go back all the way to the year 2000. So 22 years that we're this overbought and we're up against obvious. I mean, anyone who looks at charts sees this clear resistance between 103 and 105. So this is a major resistance level in an overbought state. I think we're due for a sharp pullback and an eventual trend reversal. I think the trend reversal comes when the Fed pivots back to more easing or backtracks on its hawkish talk.
Yeah, so if we get the Powell pivot where they eventually pause and have to reverse course, maybe that would be where you'd see a stronger rollover of the dollar. Let me just play devil's advocate, though, and ask on the other side, what if it was to break above that 103, 105 resistance? How far could it run if for some reason things stayed overbought?
Yes, and that's a possibility. Like I said, I deal in probabilities, not predictions. I think the probabilities are that we're topping out here. However, if we do break through this 105 area, the next resistance really isn't until 120 on the dollar. I mean, to me, that seems like an unlikely outcome, but it's possible and something you can't just totally rule out. The last major peak in the dollar was in 2001. The dollar peaked at 121. And here we are at 105. So that could be another, almost 15% higher in the dollar if we break out above here, which I don't expect.
I don't expect it either, but I always like to know what your technical outlook is just in case, because again, in these crazy markets, anything is possible. I do think it's more probable that we've seen kind of the peak for now in the dollar, but we'll keep following along. And a lot of assets are priced in dollars. So one that is also considered money, and again, typically as a safe haven, is gold. I know that's something that all of us here on the site follow very closely. You provided a weekly chart of gold going back to 2018, kind of when things had hit a low period and had this big rally. And you can see the rally up to 2089 that we saw just 2 years ago. And then it hit that same level, 2078, just this year in March. So it's made almost a mini cup and handle, if you want to look at it that way. Well, you have a couple different support lines here and a couple resistance lines. What are you looking at as far as gold in the medium term?
Yeah, I think it's a coin toss whether this immediate support holds. For those looking at the chart, there's a little trend line that goes back to March of 2020, the 2020 lows. And we're right at that trend line now, and we're right near the 200-day moving average, sitting, I think, a couple bucks above it today. So critical support level right here, right now. If this support were to fail, I think the path of least resistance is a pullback towards 1675, which is major horizontal support. And not only is that 1675 horizontal support, it's also reinforced by the 2018 uptrend line. So that's a nice strong confluence of support at 1675. I'm not sure if we pull back. I think it's a coin toss whether we backtest 1675 or not. I look at the Commitment of Traders report. Still isn't fully washed out in gold. Silver looks, a lot more compelling right here as far as being closer to a bottom. But gold, I'm really not sure. 1675 is the support level to watch below where we are now.
Yeah, we definitely don't want to break that, especially after we've already tested it. Technically, we've tested it three times. We had a little double bottom back in March of 2021, and then we had a retest of that, like a flash crash down in, I think it was in August of 2021 last year, where it tested it a third time and still held. So definitely don't want to see that break. What about some of the levels between the trend line on this chart and 1675, though? Some people have mentioned 1780. Yep. There was that prior kind of higher low at 1721. Do you think any of those levels of support could come in between where we're at now and 1675?
Yes. Yeah, I think you and I have spoken a handful of times since March 7th when gold peaked at 2078. And I've been saying consistently, we're due for a pullback from that 2078 high. And as long as we make a higher low above 1780, That's the definition of an uptrend, higher highs and higher lows. So 1780, yes, that's an important level to watch too.
So for those listening, even if they got a little bummed out, if gold was to go down and hit 1780, in the context of a larger bull market, continuing to make a pattern of higher lows should give people confidence that there's still more room to run to the upside. What would you say to people that are concerned about where gold is trading now from the big picture standpoint?
Well, number one, do you have conviction in the fundamental thesis? If not, it's really hard to ride out this kind of volatility in any asset class that's volatile. I mean, you have to have a deep conviction in the underlying thesis. So assuming that's true, I actually like this environment. I like it because from a long-term perspective, you can scoop up bargains, and then the volatility creates trading opportunities. So, you know, my trading account, we're doing pretty well here trading. So I like this environment as a trader. And then I also like the opportunity to scoop up bargains for the long-term account. Actually, to be honest with you, I wouldn't mind a pullback to 1675. In fact, I would welcome it because I've got a little bit of cash set aside, and I would love the opportunity to scoop up those bargains if it happens.
Let me ask you one more that may not be a fun question, but is it possible? We are starting to hear more and more chatter that high in August of 2020 at 2089 and then the high this year in March of 2078, could that be a double top?
Yes, it could. I mean, if you're just looking at the charts, that's what it looks like. Yeah. You know, but that's where fundamentals come in, and it's really hard to envision that. For that to be a double top, you have to think the Fed's going to keep tightening into a weak economy. And we've also got the midterm elections coming up in November. I think the Fed is highly likely, let's put it that way, to pivot before those midterm elections. And, you know, that's going to benefit the metals and commodities and hard assets.
Yeah, Steve, definitely all eyes on the Fed and how far they get into this rate hiking cycle. I think a lot of the numbers are already baked in now for maybe another 50 basis point hike, maybe two more 50 basis point hikes. But the question is, after that, how much further can they go? And we'll just have to watch and see when that data comes in. Let's pivot over to the other precious metal, the lesser precious metal, Steve, silver. It's gotten beat up a lot. It's really taken a kind of a nosedive in the last couple months. But that 2141 resistance is a level we've been watching. It had tagged it a couple of times last year. It has broken through it, and it actually closed, I think it was last week, below that level, kind of in the mid-20s. So what are you looking at now in silver? Is there the potential to go down and test some of those lower support zones? What's your outlook on silver?
Yeah, last time we spoke was 3 weeks ago, and I said, hey, I think it's pretty unlikely that we lose support at 2141. Well, that unlikely scenario happened. So the next support down below here is 1970, and then you've got 1850 to 1890. I'm still not convinced we're going to backtest those levels. The best case scenario right here would be if we reclaim the $22 level on a weekly closing basis and a monthly closing basis, and then that could have the look of like a false breakdown. And a lot of technical traders kind of buy, you know, if something breaks down below support and then it reclaims it, that's a buy signal for a lot of traders. So that's the best case scenario. That's what I'm hoping for. But, you know, of course, hope isn't a valid investment strategy. So we have to be prepared for that 1970 pullback. And then below there is 1850.
Well, I know we don't have any charts for it, but on the silver miners and gold miners, just in general, if you see a pullback like that in silver, let's say it gets down to 19 or even 1850, 1890, those support zones, do you think a lot of the pain has already been priced into these miners at this point? Because we know they outperform to the upside and they outperform to the downside. And there has been a rough journey that people that invested in the mining stocks have been on, especially the last, let's say, month when it really started selling hard in April. Do you think that the miners have already anticipated this move down and most of the damage is done? Or would you expect there to be quite a bit more carnage in the silver and gold stocks should those lower levels get tested?
Yeah, as usual, you articulated my thoughts better than I do, especially in the junior silver miners. I think that worst case scenario is already priced in. A lot of those junior silver miners are already up 20% from their lows of last week. So I think that worst case scenario was already priced in. I think it's unlikely that those junior silver miners make new lower lows, but I am keeping a little bit of cash available in case that does happen. You know, some of these junior silver miners, the lows they made last week are like 30-40% lower than where they were when, you know, silver was 2141 back in September of 2021 and August of 2021. So junior silver miners remain the most undervalued component of the whole precious metal sector.
Well, and just to that point, we've had a couple guests on that we've been talking technicals with and looking at valuations in the mining stocks. And if you look back to periods like when I got started in trading the mining stocks, it was 2010, 2011, that really euphoric period. And gold only got to 1921 as a high, and silver did blast up to near $49. But for most of that move in 2010 and 2011, silver was in the $20 to $40 range. And we've been in a silver 22 to 28 range for the last year, that big channel that you highlight on the chart. And it seems like the mining stocks are valued far lower than they were in that period. They're even valued far lower than when gold was only at $13.75 or whatever it got up to in 2016. Why are the valuations in the mining stocks so divorced from the price levels we're seeing in the metals?
It's hard to say exactly why, but you're exactly right. Mining stocks are historically undervalued relative to the actual metal. I've got some ratio charts here. I just pulled up one, SILJ versus silver. And you can see here clearly on this chart, it's way undervalued historically. You can do the same thing for gold versus GDX. GDX is undervalued relative to the metal. So that's where the opportunity is. I'm not saying we're at the low right now, but if you've got a one plus year time horizon, I think these prices are going to be looked back upon as very favorable entry points.
Yeah. And for the contrarians out there that like buying low, the period we're seeing is definitely not overpriced. We're definitely not pricey in the miners at these levels. And a good analog for what can happen in something like the junior gold miners or even the silver mining stocks is what we saw play out in uranium over the last few years. So maybe we'll take a look at the uranium stocks here just as an analog for how quickly things can move to the upside and the downside when these things take off. We've got a chart up here of URNM, and you can see some of these epic moves that we saw back in 2021 blasting up from the 200-day moving average to the resistance levels you mark on there, and then the big swoons back to the downside. So with the whipsaw market we're seeing in the uranium stocks, it shows just how much money can be made trading these particular stocks when they move. But what's your outlook on the general health of the uranium miners at this point?
Well, I think these are fantastic buying opportunities. What I like about the uranium sector is it's just pure supply demand. And, you know, the world is going to need more uranium to fuel these nuclear power plants. And the price is simply too low to incentivize that new production that's going to be needed. To me, it's really that simple of a story. And with this pullback in uranium to around, you know, the low 40s or mid 40s, that's just not high enough of a price. So the price of uranium, I think, is going to have to go higher. And these equities have just been obliterated. Like one that I track, Energy Fuels, a few weeks ago, that one tapped $11 resistance. 20 trading days later, it was down at $5. It went from 11 to 5 in 20 trading days. That's the kind of values or bargains we're seeing in the uranium sector right now. I'm not saying we've seen the exact low, but this is the kind of place I like to accumulate long-term positions for sure.
Yeah, as the great Rick Rule says, either the price of uranium goes up or the lights go out. And there is a point where the price of uranium, even in the spot contract, but particularly in the longer-term contracting cycle, has got to be above 60 and north of that to incentivize new production to come online. So it's not a question of if it's going to move up. It has to move up. And in that point of view, these mining stocks will probably rally back up to where they just were trading not too long ago or even higher levels. So I guess that brings up a good topic that maybe we can wrap up with, Steve, and that is trading psychology and the strategy around how people balance their portfolios, when they get positioned, how they get positioned. Do you have any thoughts for investors that can help them through volatile times like we're seeing right now?
I do. And before I answer that, I'll just make one more point about comparing uranium sector to silver miners. For a while, the price of uranium was around $30 a pound and silver, you know, was around 30. And both had intermediate term targets around 50. And if I look back at URNM, let's see, back in late 2020, early 2021, that ETF was below $30. And when uranium ran up to 60, that ETF went from 28 to 104. And that's an ETF. So you can do even better with, well-selected individual mining stocks. So that ETF tripled. And I think we're going to see something similar in silver when it eventually makes its move. Because if you believe silver is going to 50, what we just saw happen in the last year in uranium, I think, is a nice precursor to what's likely to happen in silver miners. Okay, switching over to strategy. Yeah, I like to say having a strategy is more valuable than short-term price predictions. It's fun to make predictions, and we've all got opinions on what's going to happen next. But more important is having a strategy. And, you know, for me personally, what I'm going to do, I've got a little bit of cash left. And if we revisit last week's lows, I'm going to deploy the rest of that cash into the junior silver miners I want to accumulate. And then if we break support and we do pull back to like 1850 silver, that's when I'm going to take some cash from my trading account and move those funds over to more, allocate to more long-term positions. So that's my strategy. That allows me to be mentally prepared for whatever outcome happens. You know, if we've seen the lows and we rally higher, I'm happy. If we pull back lower, I'm happy because I get to scoop up bargains. So, you know, that's where the strategy comes in. And it's, you want a strategy that will make you, you'll be content with whatever happens.
And maybe just one more on this topic, Steve, and that is you segregate your accounts. You have two different accounts. One is your longer term, more of a buy and hold account, where I'm sure you want to accumulate in that account when there's good technical periods of accumulation, but you're able to stave off the urge to do anything dramatic to your account by having a smaller trading account and then taking advantage of short term buy the dips and sell the rips opportunity. Maybe talk about that and how that helps you as an investor keep those two separate in your mind and take advantage of both opportunities.
Yeah, I love that question because trading and investing are two very different games with a very different set of rules. And by having separate dedicated accounts, when I'm logged into my trading account, I've got my trader hat on. I'm in the mindset of my trading rules, which are very different than my investing rules. I've also got a couple other dedicated accounts too. One I just call alternative speculations. Some of these kind of, you know, interesting sectors that aren't in my sweet spot, I just take a little bit of capital and put that into, you know, a separate dedicated account. So, you know, that's something that's helped me and hopefully it helps someone else too.
I would imagine that your trade in TLT right now with the bonds may fall into that category where it's just an interesting setup you see, or if you see something interesting just in a big equity, you can take advantage of that without losing track of your longer term thesis for your buy and hold account. So great stuff there, Steve. I always appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your charts with our audience and just your technical outlook. I'm sure we'll be chatting again in a couple weeks, and we just appreciate you sharing some time with us here at the KE Report. If people want to learn more about Steve's services, definitely click on the link below this interview. It'll take you over to his site, and he's got, I think, one of the best over-the-shoulder newsletter services out there. He shows you what he's looking at, when he's making trades, what has his attention on a macro view, and he's got a lot of other key contributors there that help out David Brady and Jeff Clark, just to name a few, that provide insights to his audience. So if you're interested in Steve's insights, definitely check out the silverchartist.com.
Thanks, Chad. Appreciate it.